Then the weather is very, very complicated there because it's very warm and humid. So I miss this in Portugal as well. What else? It's mostly that. I'm a simple person. I like to have my good food with me and not to be sweaty all the time.
That's fair. I mean, that's not too much to ask, I don't think. I don't think that's too much to ask for. Actually,
Olá e bem-vindo. Welcome to The Simple Life, an insider's perspective into Portugal. We already know about Portugal's amazing weather, food and people. In this podcast, we go deeper and meet the real people who make this country so wonderful. Dylan, who has made his life in Portugal, shares an insider's perspective into what makes Portugal the unique, beautiful, and amazing country that it is. Join him and his guests every week as they shed some light on the incredible people, culture, history, and lifestyle that makes Portugal so appealing. A country where everyone feels like they belong. This podcast is sponsored by Portugal Realty. Welcome to The Simple Life.
On this week's episode, I'm joined by Ana Bárbara Pedrosa. Ana Bárbara is a linguist, she's an author of three books, and she just happens to be one of the young advisors to Marcelo, the president of Portugal. We discuss, amongst other things, some of the books that she's written, some of the differences between Portuguese literature and Brazilian literature, some of the differences between Brazilian Portuguese and European Portuguese. Ana Bárbara gives us some tips on how people can learn Portuguese a little bit more. She talks about what she loves and appreciates about Portugal, the weather, the food, the bread, and why everybody should try Portuguese chocolate milk. For those of you listening, head over to our YouTube channel to watch some of this episode. And now, over to my conversation with Ana Bárbara. Welcome back, or welcome to another episode of Portugal, The Simple Life. And I'm delighted to be joined here by Ana Bárbara Pedrosa. Ana Bárbara, hello, and thank you for being on the podcast. How are you?
Hello, thank you for inviting me.
Are you well? How is life in Lisbon?
It's okay. It's very warm now.
September.
Yes.
September always gets sunny and everybody goes home. Well, maybe not in Lisbon. Maybe not in Lisbon.
A little bit in Lisbon, I think.
Okay. So it's a little bit quieter than August.
Yeah.
Okay, good to know. Ana Bárbara, why don't you start off telling us a little bit about you?
So I am 33 years old. I was born in Vizela. It's a town in Minho, which is in the north of Portugal. Okay. I lived there until I was 18 years old. Then I went to the University of Minho. It's in Braga, where I studied applied languages. Then I came to Lisbon, where I started studying literature and linguistics and working in lots of different things. I went to Brazil, where I took a PhD. I came back, I worked for a newspaper, I started publishing my books. Then I worked for a while as a linguist. Currently, I'm a freelancer. I mostly write. I just published my third novel. Wow. And I have freedom to write from anywhere I want, which is really cool. And I'm mostly focusing on my writing currently.
Amazing. Okay. There's a few things to unpack. There's a few things to talk about here. So do you miss the north?
Sometimes, yes. Our food is better. So I miss that. And I'm from a small town. The daily life there.
Did you say it was called Vizela?
Vizela, yes.
Okay, I haven't been there. Tell people about your village.
It's the best place in the world, of course. It's very beautiful. It's a valley. We have lots of nature, a really big park, a river. It's a small place. Most people know each other, so it has that relaxed feeling. You go out, you meet people, you know, so you feel you have people all around you. That doesn't happen that much in Lisbon, because you can go out, you see lots of people, but you don't really say hi to anyone. So that part is really different. It should be that, I think. About my hometown.
Yeah, I think people that visit Lisbon for the real sort of Portuguese experience need to go to other places like Vizela or other places where you have that feeling that everyone has time for each other, everyone has time for a conversation, time to say hello, time to tell a story. That's something that's special about a lot of other places in the country.
Yeah, I think that Lisbon currently is completely full of tourists. And I mean, I live here and I can feel that already. Like, I go for a walk mainly in the city center, not in the place where I live in. And the food, the drinks, you don't really find them Portuguese. Like, you see the menus in English instead of Portuguese lots of times. And you stop having what is normal in the Portuguese culture, like toast with butter. It's becoming more and more difficult to find a place.
To find a torrada?
A torrada, yes.
Yeah, to find torrada, you can't. That's
yeah,
sad.
Because now it is torrada with avocado and other things.
So you can't just get the big, thick piece of bread, nicely
yeah,
toasted with lots of butter.
Yeah, it's becoming a nightmare to find the simplest thing on earth.
And you mentioned that you have the best food in the country. What food are you missing from the north?
Well, the bread there is much better than the one we
Okay.
have.
Yeah. Why? Why is it better?
I mean, I don't know the process. I just know that they cook it better, so it tastes more like bread than air.
Okay.
So I mean, it's completely different. It tastes like something with flavor. I don't think I have that in Lisbon.
Yeah.
And the traditional cuisine there is very common.
Yeah. What's the traditional like sort of dish that you'd have in that area, in a place like Vizela?
Yeah, people eat a lot of codfish, of course. I mean, we eat that in other places too. Octopus, roasted chicken, canja, which is chicken
Yeah.
soup.
It's the real,
Amazing.
That's the comfort food. That's real. That's a definition of comfort
It's
food.
like the best medicine on earth. Like, no matter what disease you have, you eat canja, you're fine.
Yeah, my wife gives our boys canja on a Sunday night, you know, to get him ready for Monday, because he hates Mondays, because he hates to go back to school on Mondays. So she gives him canja for comfort on a Sunday night. It doesn't really help because he still does beaters and everything on a Monday morning, but it's okay. It's okay.
It tricks for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, exactly, exactly. There's also a saying about canja, I think, that the Portuguese like to use. Like something that's simple, a canja. It's like, I don't know if...
Yeah, true. It's been a while since I've said that the last time. Yeah, it's true.
It's when something's easy, then you say it's canja, right?
Exactly.
Something like that. Yeah. Okay.
It should be a piece of cake in English.
Say that again?
It should be something like piece of cake in English.
Piece of cake, yeah, but
it's a chicken soup.
But as a linguist, it's maybe you can shed some light. It's funny how we have these acronyms and these sayings that a lot of them revolve around food in Portugal. You know, the patient of Puxa Carocha and these kind of things. A lot of our sayings are revolved around food. It's such a huge part of what we do and who we are in Portugal.
It's true. It's not something that I can notice because I'm used to them, so
used
I
to
don't
it. Yeah, exactly.
Really lose time thinking about what they mean or what they refer to. But it's true. We have the Puxa Carocha thing.
Yeah, it's funny. It's really, really funny. And then Minho is a very, very well-known and a very good university. Maybe not as well-known as like Coimbra and things like that, but it's we have We had another guest on the podcast, a scientist who she's also in Minyu. She was also in Minyu. It's a very, very good university.
Yeah, I think so.
You enjoyed it?
Yeah, but for me, it was, I mean, the first experience of a university. But I liked being there. I was close to my house by then as well. It was funny because I had a lot of free time, and the university had a great library, so I would spend there most of my time.
Okay. And Anna Barbara, tell us a little bit about your books. Maybe you can go in the chronological order of the books that you've written.
Okay. So my first book is called Lisboa Chão Sagrado, which should be something like Lisbon Sacred Floor. I have published it 4 years ago, I think.
Or Holy Ground, Lisbon's Holy Ground, or something like that.
Could be Holy Ground, yeah, something like that. But it's not religious or anything. So I published this book 4 years ago, I think.
Okay.
Most of the plot happens in Lisbon, but I also play with the movement between Portugal and Brazil. I wrote it after I came back from Brazil. So I also use this storyteller that mixes Brazilian Portuguese and European Portuguese, which as an experience is a really funny thing to do because it's much easier to write in Brazilian Portuguese. And at the same time, it gives us writers a lot of freedom because European Portuguese is more strict. We can't do the same things as far as syntax and even semantics are concerned. So there I have five characters. Two of them are Brazilian. They come to Lisbon for completely different reasons. The other are Portuguese, the other three, and two of them also go to Brazil for different reasons. And Lisbon is kind of a character in this book because I really like the idea of this city as a place where we have completely different stories from completely different people from all over the world. And I really like to play with that, and mainly I liked to play with the many possibilities that we have in the Portuguese language. Then we had COVID, and 2 years after I published this book, I published another one called Palavra do Senhor. Literally, it would be Word of God, but I don't think this would be the best translation because Palavra do Senhor is something that people say in religious ceremonies. But this book, in this book, I tell some of the parts of the Bible, and they are told by God, that God of the Bible. So the vocabulary here is very different from the first one because it is more formal, but it also has some hints of humor. So it was mostly a rewriting with a different perspective. Okay. Which is a funny exercise to do as well. Then this last one was published a few months ago, called Amor Estragado, which would be something like Tainted Love. And there I have two storytellers. The action is in, the plot is in Vizela, my hometown.
Okay.
These two storytellers are two brothers. And the first phrase is, I killed my wife. And then it is something like, I didn't do it on purpose, but it is one of those things that once they are done, you can't really repair them. So, and in this book, I of course tell a story of violence, but I liked mainly to explore how this family was completely destroyed. Not this family of a couple, a husband and a wife. I like to show how the siblings went apart, the mother and the son who created all these acts of violence got apart as well. Because for me, that was the main idea of the book and also the place where we had the moral conflict. Because if we think about domestic violence, there is not much to say about it as a literary issue, because it's a black and white thing.
Yeah.
And I like to play with the other subtle things.
Yeah, the repercussions of it and the subplots around that.
Yes, mainly that. Yeah, that was the most difficult part, which means it was the funniest part as well.
So, I mean, you mentioned how the first book is, I want to get onto the Brazilian and the Portuguese or European Portuguese just now, but when we talk a bit more about languages. But you mentioned how the Brazilian, the book, the first book is that Lisbon is almost a character. The setting of the third book is in your hometown. And then, you know, you've got that interesting dynamic of, you know, the story of the Bible told from a certain perspective. This is, you know, we are confronted with religion a lot in Portugal, not so much because of people, but because of our buildings, because of our architecture. Mm-hmm. It's a predominantly Catholic country. How much of your book would you say was inspired by the places that you've been and the experiences revolved around that?
The first book, you mean?
All of them. All of them seem to have some kind of grounding based on you, where you've been.
Yeah. Well, the first one, I think it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't lived in Brazil, because I felt attached to the country. And once I was living in Brazil, it's not that I had a lot of social life, because I didn't, but I spent too much time reading mainly Brazilian literature. So I kind of liked to learn that new way of speaking. Of course, I was already well aware of Brazilian Portuguese, but it's completely different when you are immersed in the culture and you can find that way of speaking as a tool for your own work. So even the places in Brazil that show up in my book are places that I knew, that I went to when I was there. But not only, because there is a place called Acarajuba, which does not exist. It's a place, one of the characters is from there, and I made it up because I also enjoyed that freedom. The second book, I mean, it's not really the same thing, because I was not really creating a plot. I was mainly creating a perspective and creating some logical ground for all the things that we can find in the Bible. So the writing experience was completely different. Mm-hmm. In this third one, in Amor Estragado, I felt that for me, it was really important to put the action in a place that I know very well, because all the feelings and all the problems that I had to talk about in the first person were something that is very different from me, that feels very strange to me. For example, Manel, one of the storytellers, the one that kills his wife, is a very aggressive person. And I had to be that aggressive person, which for me felt really weird. Mm-hmm. And he also basically thinks like everything in the opposite way of what I would. So I had some that weird feeling all of the time, but I had to create the contents. And I think it helped me to create reality and to feel reality. By feeling that I was in those streets. I went to that coffee shop. I needed it to place the characters, for example. Mm. Even the houses in the books, it's not that I describe the houses, but in my mind, when I was writing the book, I placed the characters there. Like the other storyteller, Zé, he works in a store. In my mind, that's the store that was really close to my house when I lived in Vizela.
Yeah, so that wasn't it was that was important for you to somehow be able to relate to the story of the some of the characters that maybe it didn't come naturally to you. It was important to be able to visualize those
Yes.
conversations, those places to help you connect with the characters.
Yes, to see the action. And it's not that I do like really detailed descriptions, not at all. But I mean, I want to put the character walking down a street in my mind. I have to know what street he is in. So it was mostly that. And of course, there are some details that I could grab from the daily life there. For example, all of the family going to the stadium to watch Futebol Clube Vizela play. That was a common thing. It is still a common thing. It's something my family would do, so I could bring that to the book as well. And it helped me to feel that I was not making it up, that I was picturing reality, even if I was making it up.
Did I mean did growing up in a place like that, where you mentioned how you everybody knows everybody, and there is that sense of community, there's that human connection with people, even if it's on a surface level. But in a place like that, you know each other, you see people every day, you know a bit about their story. Did that help you write this story as well? Did that help you being able to identify with characters, with reactions, with subplots and things like that?
I'm not sure because, I mean, while I was growing up, playing with a lot of kids, at the same time, I was alone in my room learning how to write. So I never really saw a connection between that. And I never really thought about getting episodes of the daily life to my writing. Because by then I was writing different things. And of course, I wasn't mature enough to write long things, to write a novel. So I felt like I was giving my first steps, but I wouldn't really think about what was happening outside. I was mostly interested in what was happening inside. And inside includes the literature I had at home, and the writers I was reading. And those were my main and first teachers. So in the beginning, writing was just about writing. The references were literary references, not social references.
What do you think? I mean, what do you think influenced you to start writing at such a young age? To that curiosity to write and that creativity. What do you think was the where do you think that came from?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult to find a moment, but I remember that I enjoyed books since I was really, really young because my mother would tell me stories. She would read the books, and I would never get tired of it. I could have her reading books dozens of times. And then I learned how to read, which was really good for her because finally, she would have some time for herself. I wouldn't bug her all the time asking her to read books for me. Then I started reading. I started finding things. Books always felt like a window to the rest of the world. I was able to know things that other people wouldn't know and to know people that other people wouldn't know. I felt like I was getting attached to lots of characters, the characters of the books that people read when they are kids. And then I don't remember exactly when I started writing, but maybe when I was 9 or something. And it was 1, 2, 3 pages stories and poems, I think, maybe, I don't know, when I was 10 or something. Lots of kids like to write poems. I think it's because of the rhyme. It's cool. It's funny. But then, I mean, from the moment I was 10 on, I remember that I was feeling that I was training myself to become a writer. I would create exercises, I would do the exercises. I would create a plan of things to achieve, to do. I kind of felt like an athlete, but for literature.
Wow.
I wouldn't really work on my muscles, but I knew that writing was a kind of muscle that I needed to work on.
Yeah, it's not creativity is a muscle. It's people think it's like something that just comes all the time, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's something you have to
It takes a lot of discipline because you can have creativity, but if you don't know how to put that in a text, the idea won't be enough. It won't work.
Yeah. Can you remember any of your first like stories that you wrote as a 9-year-old that you can remember?
I remember there was something about soccer. I was write like short stories, and my team would always win.
That's good. Yeah, that's
That's
fine. I
good.
wish I could do that with sporting, but you know, it's not a good
I wish
one.
I could do that in reality as well.
Exactly. Let's talk about the book, the first book, because I'm always fascinated about the differences between the Portuguese, the Brazilian Portuguese, and the European Portuguese. And a lot of people and we've got a lot of people listening from all over the world who want to find out more about Portugal, possibly want to move to Portugal. And they often pick up like these language apps or these translator apps, but it's Brazilian Portuguese and it is very, very different. My wife always laughs because I'm quite fluent in Portuguese, but if we go to a restaurant and it's a Brazilian waitress or waiter, I really battle sometimes with the pronunciation. But I mean, what are some of the kind of interesting dynamics? I know you mentioned it's easier to write in Brazilian Portuguese. Is it because there's less rules,
Yes.
and less of a grammar, the sort of less grammatical boundaries?
Yes, there's a lot of variation as well. So they have funny expressions for everything. But also, I mean, Portuguese literary tradition is a very formal thing. And that does not happen in Brazil. I feel that Brazilian writers write the way that people would speak. Of course, there's a lot of work there as well.
Interesting.
But in most of the Portuguese literary language, we can see that there's another code, which is not social. It is mostly literary. So it's still between that canon of a way of speaking, which is mostly like formal and with difficult and uncommon words. While in Brazil, I feel there is mainly a point of writing a story or tell something instead of going around trying to sound fancy and smart. And then there are lots of different things. For example, in Portugal, if we are speaking, we would say, like, that is good. We would say, está bom, or mostly, tá bom. We would mostly say, tá bom. But Portuguese writers wouldn't write, tá bom. They would follow the rule and write, está bom. While Brazilians do the opposite. They can write, está bom, but they can also write, tá bom. So when writing in Brazilian Portuguese, and I didn't just write in Brazilian Portuguese, I basically jumped from one to another as I felt like it, kind of makes this writing experience a little broader because there are more expressions, there are more ways of saying the same thing. And it when you are writing in Brazilian Portuguese, it feels like the hands go alone writing things. More than Portuguese, of course.
Interesting.
But it's funny that you say that you have more trouble with Brazilian Portuguese. I think that's just because you are used to the
Portuguese.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Because in general, I think that Brazilian Portuguese is easier to learn because of the open vowels.
Mm.
It might get, for foreigners, for example,
yeah,
easier
yeah.
to to learn that, because when we close the vowels, it's more difficult to understand.
Well, I mean, I don't. I mean, we, yeah. Let's go down this road now while we're here. When my clients, so I'm a realtor, and a lot of the time my clients ask me about the Portuguese, and I always say to them the best thing that you can do for Portuguese is to read it and hear it at the same time, because the way that it reads and the way that it sounds is sometimes completely mm-hmm. different. And also it depends on where you are. It depends on which part of the country you're in, the way the words are said. In general, I think sometimes with Portuguese, our words are rushed quite quickly, and we don't, like you mentioned, the open vowels. Whereas I find with Brazilian Portuguese, it almost sounds like they're singing. You know, it's almost like it's this this open more. Whereas in Portuguese, I would say it's like mumbling almost, you know, or grumbling. And that makes quite a bit difference to being able to hear the full word or to hear what the person's actually saying. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, lots of people say that, mainly about Brazilian Portuguese. And I think for us, it sounds like singing as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you think it is? What do you think it is about the language that is it just because of the way that we speak it? Is it because of the speed that we speak the language in Portugal that it comes out differently?
Differently from the Brazilian?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I think it's mostly phonetics. I think it's mostly the vowels. For example, casa, house. We have two A's and we pronounce them differently. And for us, this is a very clear distinction. Mm-hmm. And I know for people from other countries, that's not really different when they hear this word. And in Brazilian, they got that part easier. It's like Spanish. They open up the vowels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about the delivery of the word, isn't it?
Yes, and how they close some of the vowels, and unless you know how to do it, like by instinct, I guess it won't be very easy to learn it.
Interesting.
Or fast.
What do you think? I mean, for people that are listening, who are looking to learn the language, to understand it a bit better, to kind of understand some basics as a linguist, what would you recommend to people in terms of some things that they should know about the language, the Portuguese, the European Portuguese? We're now talking Portuguese, Portuguese.
I always think that songs help a lot, because you can listen to how the words are pronounced, and it's easier to memorize it because you can sing along and stuff like that. At least it helps me when I'm learning other languages. And then if there is some comfort already, I think that something that works well too is to read a kind of simple book that you already know very well. For example, I was learning Italian a couple of months ago, and for me, it helped me a lot to read Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, because I already know that book by heart. I read it in other languages as well to help me to get used to the language. So I think that part really helps. And of course, listening to the language always helps a lot, because if you are just reading, you are not getting how it sounds. So you may be able to understand when you read, and you may be able to write in the language, but then talking to a real person will be a completely different thing. So I think those things.
It helped me to read children's books when I first moved to Portugal. I'd just get the most basic, like, children's book, and that helps a lot, because it was a simpler Portuguese. But yeah, that's some
and you can see things in action, for example, prepositions. Instead of just memorizing prepositions, blah blah blah, you see the preposition in a phrase, so I think it's easier to get it automatized when you use it afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, the propositions are a real challenge, and the masculine and feminine of words. Oh my goodness! I mean,
it's in Portuguese.
In Portuguese, yeah. which words are masculine, which to remember which ones are masculine, which ones are feminine. I've always struggled a little bit with that.
Yeah, it's not one of the worst languages because, you know, that's when words end up in A, they should be feminine, you know, they should be
Yeah. But
masculine.
my challenge some, that I've had in the past is when I'm saying a word with you know like a noun, and trying to remember what is it masculine or is it do I need to end it with an O or an A? You know, and that was always my challenge.
For example, in Norwegian, it is much worse because you have no idea what the gender is, and they have three genders, so you just have to memorize.
They have
the
three
gender.
genders for a noun.
Yeah, and you just have to memorize the preposition.
Male and female, and what's the third one? It's like a
it's neutral, but
gender neutral.
Yeah, but it's not really male or female. I mean, they use that categorization.
Yeah.
But chair can be male, woman can be male, table can be female. So it's like gender one, two, three. It's grammar only. It's not like we have in Portuguese,
yeah.
And there it's very tricky because because there isn't this rule, the AO rule. So once you learn a word, you have to learn the preposition, which is twice the work.
Wow,
it can create problems.
How many languages do you speak? And about
I don't speak them. The I mean, with all of them with the same is, but it should be Portuguese, English, Spanish, French, Italian, Norwegian, a little bit.
Okay. We had a guest previously on the podcast. We're going back probably maybe in season one already, a guy called Ricardo Monteiro, and he also, I mean, he'd worked in Brazil, he'd worked in Spain, he'd worked in Belgium, and he also spoke like five languages or something. He used to work for Havas, the advertising firm. And I said to him, what is the deal with Portuguese being so proficient with languages? Because it's common that you will find Portuguese people, even in a normal workplace, that can speak three languages. And there is this kind of openness to, hey, I'll try, I'll learn a new language, I'll do that. What do you think it is about the culture with Portugal and languages that we're open to trying different languages and learning different languages with so much ease?
Yeah, we learn two languages at school, so that helps a lot. We learn English. When I was a kid, we were learning French. I think that now most people can choose between French and Spanish. And I think some kids choose Spanish because it's easier.
It's easier.
But it's I think it's better to learn French because then you get the opportunity to have a formal education on French. And then it's kind of easy to get Spanish. By reading, by watching TV, you don't really need much. But those languages should be kind of common among the Portuguese people. French is becoming more uncommon.
More uncommon?
More uncommon, yeah. Because, I mean, when my parents were kids, for example, they would learn French instead of English.
Yeah.
Then we got English, but at the same time we had French. But English was already the main foreign language. And then French kind of started losing its place. But I think, I mean, we can still find people who speak French, but it's not everybody now or everybody who studies. But then we have a kind of common ground for different languages, for example, Portuguese, French, Spanish, Italian, they are all kind
They're
of
all Latin based.
Exactly. I mean, after you learn
but
so, one.
But the thing that I'm talking about, Ana Barbara, is that there's a willingness in general in Portugal for people to talk another language. They're happy to do it, which isn't common everywhere. And I'm wondering why.
I know that in other countries, for example, in Spain, it's not common for people to to listen to the other languages. For example, if they are watching a movie, most of the times they have the simultaneous translation, so they don't listen to the foreign language, which makes it much more difficult to learn. So I think that's the way that the language learning is seen in the country as a strategy also helps. For example, in Spain, it was forbidden during the dictatorship to work with the other languages. Here, I mean, it's really uncommon to have that. I mean, when we are watching a movie, we listen to the original language. The exceptions would be cartoons for little kids.
Yeah, animated films or things like that.
So I think that part works a lot because we are in we are always contacting with other languages.
Yeah,
it's funny.
No, I think it's wonderful. It's a thing that makes people automatically feel welcome when they hear someone that's willing to speak their language. You know, even if it's a little bit uncomfortable, there's a confidence. I find Portuguese people are quite confident. They know that they're possibly making mistakes and not speaking the language perfectly, but they're happy to do that as a way of communicating, as a way of connecting with people. And I think it's something quite special here that people do that.
Yeah, I mean, I can notice mainly in Spain that we don't find the same thing. For example, I think that a Portuguese person who would go to Spain and wouldn't speak Spanish would still try to speak Spanish. So they would speak Portuñol, which should be an official language, by the way. Or at least they would say, excuse me, sorry, I don't really speak. Maybe you can understand. And I noticed that when people come to Portugal from Spain, they just speak Spanish.
Yeah, they don't even try. Yeah,
deal with it.
Yeah. No, it's. I think it's something quite special. About Brazil, Ana Bárbara. I mean, you sound like you really enjoyed your time there. But what were some of the things that you appreciated about Portugal while you were there, and missed about Portugal?
Really enjoyed being there because it was actually a hard time because I didn't have a social life there. So.
Okay, so I take it back. You didn't enjoy being there. So what did you miss, and what did you appreciate about home?
You know, it had some really good advantages. For example, the contact with that literature. There, of course, I had some here, but there it was so much easier. And the fact that I was just taking a PhD, so I had free time. And I didn't know many people, so I had free time. So I was working out all the time. So that part ended up being great because I was in great shape when I was living there. What did I miss when I was there? Well, chocolate milk, because we have...
Ucal?
Ucal, of course.
Ucal, yeah.
The best.
Or do you have it cold or hot? Do you go with cold or hot?
Cold, of
cold.
Course.
You never have it hot? Ucal can?
I tried once, but come on.
Okay. Okay, so for people listening who don't know what we're talking about, Ucal is like it's a bottle of chocolate milk that you'll find in pretty much any cafe in Portugal. It is delicious, I have to say. I haven't had one for ages. Maybe I'm going to have one on my way home after this conversation.
When my mother went to visit me, I asked her to bring me Ucal.
Cool.
And other things. It was mostly food because, I mean, normal things that I have in Portugal, like our breads, our cheeses, I couldn't find there. Chocapic, I couldn't find there.
What's that? What
that cereal. That's the best cereal in the world.
Okay.
It's chocolate cereal. Couldn't find it there as well. And then, as far as culture is concerned, it was very difficult to deal with some things. Like you go to some official place and you are expecting the information you get there is official, but then not really, you know, which is weird. For example, I remember in the administrative service in the university, they gave me wrong information. And with that, I was supposed to stay there for an extra semester. I didn't want to. They're like, yeah, okay, whatever. I was wrong. And I'm like, no, come on, solve this. And then they were really surprised when I started complaining. Then the weather is very, very complicated there because it's very warm and humid. So I miss this in Portugal as well. What else? It's mostly that. I'm a simple person. I like to have my good food with me and not to be sweaty all the time.
That's fair. I mean, that's not too much to ask, I don't think. I don't
No.
think that's too much to ask for. Actually, that's yeah, that's pretty, I think that's very fair. I wanted to just come back to one thing that you're talking about with the differences with the literature, because it's quite interesting. You mentioned how the literature in Portuguese European Portuguese literature is not written simply, it's written at a higher, you said a literature level. What is the reason for this? Is this because historically literature wasn't available to everybody? It was available to only a certain group of people. Is that the reason? And that's kind of how it's still written that way because of that history.
I think so because most people couldn't write and most people couldn't read. So it was a thing that was going around in the high class. So even when we read Portuguese literature, we find the problems of the high class there and not the daily life
The everyday man.
person. We can still find that in Portuguese literature. We can still find plots that we don't really know what they're about, but they seem like highly philosophical or something like that, and not really to depict life as it is. And I feel that in Brazil, we have the opposite. We read the literature that is being produced there, and we feel that we are reading Brazil. We are reading what's happening. We are reading about the problems, about what it is to be human, what it is to be that person, what it is to have that condition. We are reading the way that people speak instead of using words that, I mean, you can read them and you can say, okay, you know a lot of words, but then the text doesn't really work because you can't really reach the reader who are speaking in a code.
Interesting.
So I really think that Brazil has that. So it's a bit ahead of Portugal.
With I mean it's quite well documented. Portugal's literary rate has improved drastically over the last, 10, 20 years. Do you think we're going to see a change in literature because of that? Are we going to see a change in the way people write because more people are reading, more normal people are reading in a way?
I'm not sure because I think that in Portugal, mainly, there are more people reading, of course, and we are also publishing a lot of books. But it's not really literature books most of the time. Even if it is fiction, it's not literature. So I feel that we can't really lose the connection of what we have in the literary tradition, like plots that makes us think about the world, make us see the condition of someone, instead of just seeing something happening as a Netflix TV series for entertainment.
Interesting.
So, for example, while I feel that there are more people reading in Portugal, at the same time, I also feel that the average of the reader is getting a little bit worse. So people who are reading a lot and daily wouldn't understand other types of books because if we look at what is being read, we can see that kind of entertainment
Interesting.
instead of
Yeah.
work.
Interesting. And Barbara, before we wrap up, I see also recently you were involved in I don't know how to translate it, like a group of young advisors to the president, to Marcelo. Tell us a little bit about that.
I can't really tell much about it.
Oh, you're not allowed to.
No. I mean, yeah, there is this group.
Okay.
We meet occasionally, like once a month or once every 2 months. We discuss a specific theme, but I can't really say much more than this. No,
You can't tell us like what advice you gave to Marcelo. You're not allowed to tell us
I can't tell what
anything.
it's about either.
Okay, awesome. But that sounds amazing. And Barbara, what makes you proud of your country? What makes you proud of Portugal?
Ronaldo, of course, Ronaldo
Ronaldo.
is the first answer.
You need to watch rugby. At the moment, right now, Portugal is playing in the Rugby World Cup. In the Rugby World Cup. It's only the second time they've ever played in a Rugby World Cup, and that's
I've
amazing.
never seen a rugby game in my life,
You
so.
should watch. It's amazing. If you like violence, you
But
know,
I
you
saw
might write a
the
book. You might want to write a book about it.
about three. It could be. I think I played it once in school, but no one really got the rules very well. We're just punching each other.
Besides Ronaldo.
Besides one else. Well, I mean, the idea of pride is weird to me, but there are things I like in Portugal. I think we have a very progressive law in terms of human rights. I think most of the problems people have in other countries are solved here. And in general, I think that Portuguese people are progressive. And they are okay with dealing with what is not that common. We don't really have major problems. Of course, that we have problems like all the other countries, but even if we have to compare to others, we are always kind of average, not the worst in the line. And in generally, I like the weather. It's okay. I'd rather have Scandinavian weather because I really like snow, but in general I can deal with Portuguese weather as well. We have an amazing food, I think, amazing bread, grilled fish. And generally I think that people are really easygoing. We don't have a lot of violence. For example, I never have to worry if I go to some place where do I have my phone? Am I showing too much money? Those things never crossed my mind. I remember when I was in Brazil, people were
You
always
have to
telling me,
think about those things, yeah.
"No, don't leave your laptop in the middle of the street while you go away for 5 minutes." I'm like, "Oh, why not?" Or I used to be in the library and to not to lose my spot while I was grabbing lunch, I would just leave my MacBook on the table, and people would run and say, "Hey, come on! Did you forget your laptop? What is wrong with you?" Oh, just not to lose my place. People are like, "Are you retarded or something?" So I think we have those very good things.
Nice.
We have public health, which is, I mean, I don't even think about it because it's common here. But for people who don't have that, I think that's a major issue. Of course, that the public health system has its problems, but the thing is, if you are completely broken, you know you can go to the hospital and you'll get treatment. We have public school as well with good quality. I think it's mostly
Interesting.
that.
Anna Barbara, what's one thing that you would like people to remember and take away from our conversation? Just one thing.
That we have great bread and the best chocolate milk in the world. I think that Ucal doesn't have
It should be a brand like, it should be being pushed like wine,
yeah,
it's
that, but no, it's much better,
much better.
more than wine.
How can people follow you online, see what you're up to, keep in touch with your work, and
I
just stay in
put
touch?
the links of the things I do in LinkedIn and Facebook.
Okay.
mainly that. And in Instagram, I also put some things.
Okay.
In Instagram, I put other random things as well.
Okay. I'll put some links in the show notes, and people can follow you and stay in touch with what you're up to. Anna Barbara, a question that we ask all of our guests: Portugal, the simple life, why?
Well, because we have, let me think. That's not. Well, we have an okay weather and great food, which helps a lot. We don't have to battle with the environment all the time. And of course, that in our daily lives, we don't really think about it. But when we have to compare it with people who have to fight the environment every day, we get to see that we really have it in a simple way here.
And good chocolate milk.
And the chocolate milk, of course.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I don't know if you know this part. This is the part where you say, it's a wrap. I'm going to let you call it.
Yeah, I know that part.
It's a wrap?
It's a wrap.
So thank you once again to our guest. And thank you to all of you for listening. Please subscribe, share with your friends, give us a thumbs up, and please leave a comment or a review. We always love to hear from you. Don't forget, Portugal the Simple Life also has a magazine, so download it. It's for free. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. And as we say in Portugal, Sejas bem-vindo. Welcome to the Simple Life.